Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
All right, what's going on, everybody? This is the Talking Tactics Podcast. My name's Daniel.
My name is Half Hope.
We record this podcast every Tuesday. Really, we record it on Mondays, but it is what it is.
Oh, don't give it away, Daniel. Nobody knows.
Remember to follow us on Twitter at Talking Tactics, Instagram Talking Tactics, Facebook Talking Tactics. If you're listening on Spotify, give us a follow.
Give us a follow to follow the podcast.
If you want to help the podcast out monetarily, remember to hit us up or look us up on Patreon.
Yes.
$3 a month, you get access to all of the back catalog that we've done.
Yes.
And all that we will do. And yeah, if you're on Apple Podcasts, subscribe.
Yeah.
It's free. Leave us a 5-star
review. Allegedly.
And we will read it on the show. Now, we
do have... 4-star reviews are crap.
This is going to be kind of like a house cleaning episode. So we do have a few reviews that we need to read from around the world. This is from the United States, from Banjo Man 1916-11. Whether you want measured, strange, reasonable takes from the ever-intelligent Daniel, or the habitual line-stepping, whose man's is this hot takes of HH, you're in for a blast. This dynamic duo, and sometimes Carl, aka the most underrated podcaster of 2020, have the perfect balance of wit, analysis, and just straight-up quality. If this podcast were a player, it'd have stats and pass the eye test to back it up. Ooh. A world-class podcast in every way. The Liverpool FC of podcasts. From Cali with love.
Hey, shout out to thank Banjo, you, man. Shout out to California, up, man. Thank you, man. Hey, thanks. Thank you.
Another review from the United States by Cliff Duba. Cliff W, maybe.
American bias.
Excellent podcast. I appreciate the honesty from you guys. It helps a new soccer fan from the United States, an old
it's
guy.
Football, by the way.
Get in tune with world soccer. You are opening up a new football understanding of the sport. Being here in the U.S., the old days, we weren't exposed to soccer at all. It would be nice to break down soccer tactics and football, how you apply those tactics. Thanks for helping the old new guy out.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your 5-star review. Tactics. But can you please use the word football, please? I am begging you. The word soccer makes my brain melt.
As I keep telling you, it was a British invention. They messed it up.
I don't give a damn. It's I don't care. It's about football. It's called football. That's what I care about. It's called football.
And for a podcast, like I was trying to say, for a podcast called Talking Tactics, we kind of don't talk about tactics. It's a nice sounding title, I think.
We talk about tactics in an ideological sense, yes, not in the kind of plain sense of, no, it's tactics in the broader sense.
You know what? I love that. That is exactly right. And lastly, from Norway, K.
Hey, it's very legit.
Is that legit Norwegian?
Yeah, just carry on, carry on, carry on, carry on. Keep talking.
From K-triple-M-K, insightful and funny, great pod. The lads have their own opinions. They just don't summarize what the media has already told us. Thumbs up. And the thumbs up is like brown.
Oh!
So they have black people in Norway. Who knew?
Oh, no. Do you know what I thought? He's white, but he was like, because I want to stand with my brothers, I'm going to make it a black thumbs up.
Do you know what I think he is? I think he's Nigerian. Because Nigerians are everywhere.
No.
Yes.
There
is no place on this planet that a Nigerian has not been.
I think is why. There are no Nigerians in Greenland or Alaska.
Yes, there are.
No, they're not.
Yes, there are.
He's white. That dude is white.
Which
there,
means...
There are no Nigerians that exist in either Alaska, everywhere. The North Pole, the South Pole, or Greenland.
There's got to be a Nigerian in Greenland. Nigerians are in Russia.
Do you know how big Russia is? I'm sure.
I
can find a Mongolian in Russian. So Russia is a big place, trust me. So that's not a big deal. There are no Nigerians in Alaska or Greenland.
See, we have proof, or at least something close to proof. Adaj says there are Nigerians in Alaska, by the way. There are. Do you know, like, places like Fairbanks and Anchorage? There's no way that there's not Nigerians there. Ghanaians travel too, but not as much. I'm trying to think of just African people that you find. Just
and trust me, the Ghanaian women are top notch, man. Shout out to Ghanaian women, man. Top notch, man.
I'm trying to, like, who has a broader diaspora than Nigerians?
Well, Nigeria is the most populous African country.
That's
so
what I'm
based
saying.
On the numbers,
so it makes sense. Maybe Egypt. You find Egyptians a lot of places. Kenya. Kenyans leave a lot. Congolese. Everybody leaves now that I think about it. You want to start with football questions or not football questions?
Football questions first.
Okay. From BK Ariza 1. Sorry if I butchered your name. Do you think FIFA and UEFA should do more to stop greedy owners and executives that know nothing about football turning great clubs into banter clubs?
Oh, yeah.
If we take Manchester United, for example.
Glazers, like people. Kroenke.
The Glazers don't know that much about football. Then they hire people, maybe like a Ed Woodward, who maybe knows a little bit about football, but for all intent and purpose, he's a money man. He doesn't have like a footballing vision, I would say. Mm-hmm. Should UEFA step in and be like, well, you need people with more footballing experience to steer the ship?
No. That's what makes it fun, is that you are left to your own devices as to how you want this football club to be run. UEFA or FIFA shouldn't have to intervene and say, well, you're not a footballing person, so therefore you don't know. No, that is what makes it fun and interesting, is that, okay, how is this club going to run with regards to who owns it, who's the footballing director? Which is why you look at a Bundesliga, what's called the 50+1 rule and so forth, where nobody can have a majority share of or ownership of a club outside of the fans. The fans always have a good control of their clubs, so therefore it can never go off the rails. So you always have to act in the best interest of the fans. That's just what they have in the Bundesliga. So it is interesting to look back and say, okay, so Arsenal, how did you get in this position? United, how did you get in this position? So from that point of view, it is interesting just to see how these clubs are operating with who owns them and how they are run. But I can take a step back and be like, you know what? That could be a good idea in terms of, you're not really getting involved. It's just sort of like, hey, this is football. Let us ensure that every single person that is involved in this sport are for the sport. Because Stan Kroenke doesn't give a damn about football. He just gives a damn about, are these guys profitable? Fine. He would have kept, no, Wenger decided to leave. He didn't sack Wenger. Wenger decided to leave. Wenger was a great employee for Kroenke. Glazers, do they look like they know how to spell football? So I think in that sense, it could be a good thing in just removing non-footballing people from football, because what you're having is, with every year, football is getting bigger, more profitable, more marketable. So more and more of these rich owners and people are like, man, this is a great money-making enterprise. Maybe this could be a great enterprise to hide my taxes, all these kinds of different things. And that's what they're going
to do. There was a woman, Nina Bracewell Smith and Danny Fisman. Okay, so these are two people that had stakes in Arsenal. I guess from like their family had some ties to the club at like the very beginning. Especially Bracewell Smith, I think. Like, they had been around for some time. And her husband was like one of the people that got ownership in Arsenal, I think from like sometime near the beginning of the club. And Arsenal fans can correct me if I'm wrong, but she owned, I think, like 16% of Arsenal. And then there was another person who owned a comparable amount. So there was like 32% of Arsenal on the table in like 2010, 2011. And Kroenke just bought them out. And then there was Usmanov,
yeah.
He was another one that had like a sizable percentage, but it wasn't majority or anything. So Kroenke bought his share. So now he owns 100% of the club. So I would think, just kind of going back to your kind of example about Germany, would be don't have somebody that can own 100% of a club. Like, make sure you can only own maybe up to 40%, 50%. And then you have to at least deal with other people who might have more understanding about the sport as a whole. Because now you've given Arsenal, which is the third biggest club in England, we can say, behind Manchester United and Liverpool. Mm. If we're talking global brands, maybe still three. Yeah. Maybe Chelsea could rival it globally. I would argue probably maybe the second,
because Arsenal is bigger in
Arsenal's Africa. Yeah, Arsenal's big, so
that most
you're giving that burden and task and responsibility to a person who can't even run a sport that he can understand in American football and basketball. Like, his teams, I mean, they get lucky, I guess. Like, the Rams got lucky, and the Nuggets get lucky, but they haven't won championships.
Is he the owner of the Pittsburgh team, or is that someone else?
No, that's the Rooneys.
Oh, okay.
That's like a family. But Kroenke, his group owns the Denver Nuggets, who haven't won a championship, I think, since the 1970s. The Los Angeles Rams, who I don't think have ever won. The St. Louis Rams won in, like, the 2001 or something like that, mm-hmm. but they haven't won since. And then they moved to LA, which pissed off the people that were in St. Louis. And then he owns Arsenal, which has he won a trophy that's not called the FA Cup with Arsenal? I don't think so.
Yeah.
So you're giving your team to that guy. And I would say football clubs have a different environment, or they're a different, especially in Europe. They're a different, they mean something different, I would say, to the city. Or just like the communities are kind of different than like American sports, I would say. Maybe you'll find some, like, you know, the Pittsburgh Steelers might be a good example of like what it means to Pittsburgh. But there's like, if you go to Los Angeles, for instance, like the Lakers mean something, but so do the Dodgers, so do, you know, just all of the sports teams that are there. If you go to New York, of course the Knicks mean something, but so do the Giants or the Jets or the New York Yankees or something like that. If you're from North London, how many things are there for you to attach to other than Arsenal or Spurs or whichever the other teams that are up there are? Like, there's really one thing, unless you're like a rugby fan and there's some rugby stuff that you don't know about. Cricket.
England,
but football is the national sport.
It's a national sport.
So I think that scarcity of things to attach yourself to makes owning a club like an Arsenal or like a Liverpool, it's crazy, or Manchester United, like that means something extra on top of what it might mean globally, just the local kind of politics or dynamics of it. And if you don't understand that, and you run them into the ground, I think that there should be some oversight. But who's going to tell a billionaire you're making mistakes? That's difficult. Is it weird that, like, billionaires, their kids are always, like, somewhere in the mix? So, like, even if we look at, you know, American politics, like, the guy's the president, but, like, his kids are, like, everywhere.
Yeah.
Like, why don't you find somebody else other than your kids? The same thing with Kroenke, you know? Like, his kids...
Well, as I say, who would you trust your money with? Your blood or some guy that you don't know? Family. Keep it close.
It depends.
Keep it in the family. No, true. It depends. But in most times, keep it in the family. you would go first to your son than just an employee you've known for 5 years or 6 years.
I don't know.
In most cases, I'm saying, in most cases. Some cases, your son may be a prick, but, you know.
I would want an expert. Like, maybe you've made your son an expert. Like, you've sent him to the best schools and whatnot. But give me somebody that has the experience. If it's my son, you know, if he's qualified, or my daughter, if she's qualified, then fine. But, you know, it's just awkward, like, the amount of billionaires' kids that, like, get positions of power. So I think it's Josh Kroenke who comes out and gives speeches to Arsenal fans like, yo, we're going to try to sign some players. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. It's like, who are you? Maybe you know football better than your dad. What if the son is adopted? Hey, here we go. Why is Daniel a snob?
Yes, finally, a real question.
What
are a snob?
Define snob in the way that you understand it.
You and Carl are both snobs.
Okay.
Why are you a snob? I think that you know you're intelligent, and you know you've been to, you know, have all these, like, you know, you read all these books and stuff.
Don't get
and you, me. And you hey, no. Let me speak. And you look down on people. For example, let's air out the dirty laundry right now. Let's air it out.
Okay.
So I remember there was a time when there was questions, and then I think Daniel Jones or Ortega, homeboy, who's I think is in the live chat, and then he said, oh, he wanted to ask this question. I think it was like a comparison question or something. You're like, oh, I don't want to answer that stuff. And I was like, wait. It's a question. Someone is asking the question. Why would you want to stand? You're not answering it because you are snobbish, because you feel that, because you are an let me finish. Because you're an intellectual, because you're a writer and stuff, you are better than these common folk, these peasants, these peons. You are a filthy, stinking, snobbish individual. So yeah.
Well, okay.
You are snobbish.
No, I agree. I agree. I haven't denied that I'm snobbish. I just want to know understand what do you think by snobbish. I agree. I can have snobbish tendencies, which if you have enough of them, it can make you a snob. So I'll say I'm particular with words and English, and that can come off as snobbish to a lot of people. So I understand the critique.
No, it's not about words. You're just a generous snob.
See, but
person,
I don't think my personality though is snobby.
I'm a man of the people, as people know. I'm a man of the people. I'm right down there with the working class. Man.
When I think of snobbish, I think of like rich, aristocratic, wouldn't talk to, I don't know, somebody who's poor or somebody who's destitute. And I am poor and destitute for all intent and purpose. So, like, it's just, but where the snobbery comes from is just, we're doing something that involves English. And that's my field. I am quite particular with, like, how do you ask a question? What are we talking about? Why are we talking about this for? What's the purpose? What's the meaning? On all of those kinds of questions, especially if you're not expecting to be asked or be rebuked, it's snobbish. So I get that part.
I'm not arrogant, am I?
Slightly.
Explain. How am I? No. How I am the least arrogant person I've ever met.
You're the self-proclaimed greatest football analyst on the planet.
I say that in jest. As in, character-wise, attitude-wise, personality-wise, do I come across as arrogant? No. I don't like that pause. I don't like that pause.
I mean, I'm just saying, like, nobody calls themselves the GOAT.
I said,
isn't arrogant.
I said, in terms of how I talk and how I operate, I don't come across as arrogant. I don't. I say those things in jest.
It depends on the subject. So there are times where you will defer to me because I think you understand. Maybe Daniel has a better understanding of some shit that he read. But when we get into football conversations, normally I defer to you because I think you're on a higher level, maybe because you're older, maybe because you grew up with it more. I do think there's like an air of, I wouldn't call it arrogance, I would just call it like confidence. Like, I know what I'm talking about. And I don't find a problem with that. But I think some people could interpret like the confidence of your words as like, yo, this guy really thinks he's the shit. Like, he knows what he's talking about. And then maybe then when you come out and say, I'm the greatest football analysis of all time, you sound kind of like Pep. Where he's like, I destroyed football. It's like, that's one of the most arrogant things I've ever heard. Like, what do you mean? So, yeah, I think confidence and arrogance, it's a thin line. So, now, if I ask you, do you think you're confident with your football analysis? Or do you think you have a confident personality?
In real life, I wouldn't call myself, like, a buoyant, kind of fully confident kind of guy. I just sort of blend in. Stuff, but when it comes to football, I just believe that I just know what I'm talking about. It's not an arrogance, it's just that an assuredness. Like, I always use this line, man, by Five Dog Man. If I don't say I'm the best, tell me who the hell will. That is such a great saying, because sometimes you need to just say, you know what, yeah, I am good at this. Because if you just keep on saying, well, no, then people just walk over you and do this. No, I see. Sometimes they're like, don't even know. I do know what I'm talking about. And I do believe that when it comes to football, in the most part, yeah, I know what I'm talking about.
See? And people would interpret that as like a form of arrogance, whereas think it's just, I'm just confident in what I know.
Those people that do are. So
now we get into the territory where you're kind of proving the point. Like, you can't call people and be like, I'm not arrogant, or I'm snobbish and he called people. I've never done that.
Yes, you have. I'll do a gut lock. I'll pull up the receipts. Next question. What's the next question?
If we had a match of the current 11 all white players versus all non-white players, who will win?
We discuss this and you
I'm not gonna we're not gonna answer the question. I'm just reading the question to ask, why would you ask us to do that?
Yeah, that's my thing. That's for what reason? Isn't there enough racial tension as there is? You wanna now add to it?
Okay, this is another thing where I could get snobby. I don't want to make an 11, bro. Pratik Gupta, you make us the 11. You give us your non-melanated 11 and your melanated 11, and then we will decide which one you think would win from the options that you give us. But I'm not gonna sit down and be like, well, do we count Benzema as melanated or not melanated? Do we put Zidane in the white team? Like, I'm not doing that with you. If Ancelotti does a Leicester this season, greatest manager of all time. So if Everton win the Premier League,
no.
And I don't think Everton doing a Leicester is possible. And then to MC Polo's point, I think he goes there. Is it really doing a Leicester when they weren't in a relegation battle last season? They also bought a whole new midfield, and it's probably one of the best in England right now. They have a similar wage to Spurs, so not close to doing a Leicester. Like, Leicester is a particular thing.
I think, unless I'm wrong, someone correct, maybe someone do a fact check. I think Everton are one of the few clubs who've never been relegated.
Yes.
Yeah, because remember, Everton existed before Liverpool. So they're one of the oldest clubs in English history. So yeah, I don't think they've ever even been relegated before. So already, that's already proves that they're not a Leicester City who have touched Division 1, Division 2, and so forth. So yeah, I mean, nah. Like, it would be a very good achievement. It wouldn't be anything close to Leicester City. Leicester City is a once-in-a-lifetime achievement. We're never seeing us ever again in our lifetime.
The Premier League top six have veto voting power to block a purchase of any club. It's going to ruin football. They would approve owners they think won't challenge them. It's going to ruin the competition. So have you heard of this? Like, I know there's something going on with like 18 clubs in the Premier League or something weird. So what's the proposal?
And shout out to Nick's also helped to truncate this for us. Liverpool came up with the proposal, and this is initially to help the EFL clubs.
Speaking to the mic.
Liverpool Football Club, based in Merseyside, said, we're going to do this freaking proposal to help those poor clubs in the English Football League through this whole COVID crisis by making it 18... reducing it from 20 teams to 18 teams, scrapping the Community Shield, scrapping the League Cup, and restructuring the way that the pay packets works within the Premier League in order to now push that money over to the EFL clubs. Sounds good. Sounds great. United have now agreed to this and so forth. But the issue here is that this now becomes a much more bigger issue, because it's you look at that looks good, but now they're now pushing for greater ownership of the league. So what they want is that for the top six clubs, they would then now have the power to change rulings. And specifically, if let's say a Newcastle or a Southampton are about to be bought by a billionaire owner, these six clubs can now have the power to veto that. So it is a very elitist model that pretty much totally ignores the existence of the other clubs that are within the league. Because as someone said, they said, and I can't remember who this individual was, but he said, why should Huddersfield have the same kind of voting power as Manchester United? Which is wild. Because if we're all in the same league and in the same competition, any rulings, every single person in that league should vote for that. It makes no sense that only six clubs should have that kind of voting power, because if you're saying that, then that dirty word that nobody wants to talk about, that everybody wants to ignore, props up again. And what's the word, kids? Super League.
That's two words, but okay.
So what's the two words, kids, that everyone hates to hear? Super League.
Actually, I'm just trying Super to steer into the snobbery, bro. I'm just trying to steer into it. If people already think it, let's...
Snobbish bastard, let's man.
Do you know what this is? The way you describe it. Do you know about the United Nations Security Council?
Is that the one that Bush said F you to with the Iraq War?
I'm not sure what Bush did with them.
Yes. And then some countries have a canal veto.
Yes.
But no. That is exactly what happened in 2003 with the Iraq War. So all the UN said, no weapons of mass destruction. But America, because they have a veto power, they basically vetoed what the UN ruled.
Interesting.
So then it was like, I was like, so what's the point in the UN if specific countries have a power to overrule a democratic ruling?
Right. So in theory, every nation has like one vote. A proposal is given, and all countries, there's no difference between, you know, Mauritania and America in terms of like one vote, right? But then there's like the UN Security Council. And these are people with like nuclear weapons. So there's five countries that are always around. So the United States, France, UK, Russia, China. Those five don't leave the Security Council. Mm. And then they pick a rotating number of other countries. So it could be Brazil, could be South Africa, could be Australia, could be Japan. And those countries rotate. I think there's 9 or 11. But they have a disproportionate amount of power on the United Nations to where they can do exactly what you just said. The whole world can vote like, yo, war is a bad idea. Don't do it. And they can just go, thanks, but no thanks. We're going to do what we're going to do anyway. And that is what it is. So now the reason I've looked into this is because Nigeria and South Africa in particular have asked for like their own veto power or to be added to the permanent members of the Security Council that Africa should be represented with, you know, its billion plus population. It should have some countries represented on that Security Council. So when you say the top six will have their own kind of veto power, or they will have, you know, greater power than those below, than the 12 below, I guess. It kind of sounds like that. The league could vote on something, but Manchester United is like, thanks, but we're going to do our own thing anyway. And they just go do it. And there's nothing anybody can really do about it. So I don't like that idea. Like if everybody's equal, if everybody's in the same league, then we should all be following the same rules. Like there shouldn't be a top six rule and a bottom 12 rule. Like that's not cool. And not to mention, as you say, Everton have never been relegated. They've always been in this league. You're going to say Manchester City deserves more power than Everton? How does that work historically?
No, but then to play devil's advocate, someone would say that it's about money, it's about branding. What right now in 2020, what's the bigger brand? Man City or Everton? It's Man City. Which is why this is the eventuality down the line is going to be a Super League. And I think we're already seeing the early seeds being planted, whether it's in 5 years, 10 years or so forth, of a Super League being formed. Because what these clubs are realizing is, my gosh, we can earn so much more money if we have or create an ecosystem where we have a greater share. Because right now, basically the ecosystem has been created by the Premier League, which means that those executives and those owners also get a sizable share. But if a Netflix or an Amazon, who are already rich already, say, guys, we can give you a greater share of the money, far more than what these Premier League guys are giving you, they're like, bro, let's write if we can make more money under an Amazon Prime umbrella rather than the umbrella of the Premier League.
It makes me think that they'll get their way, yeah, in a sense. Because
the people have to revolt. If the people don't revolt, then yeah, of course they'll get their way.
They'll get their way because they can always just use, fine, we'll just go join Juventus, AC Milan, Inter, Dortmund, PSG, Marseille, Bayern in the Super League. And then that will force the hand of like Madrid and Barcelona that, okay, we can't miss out on this, even though we might not need to. And then there you go. Like, you have enough teams for a Super League. You just go get some, maybe some Ajax or a team. I don't think Ajax would do it, actually. But maybe a Porto or Galatasaray or, I don't know, Olympiacos, somebody that can get easily relegated probably. You just go do that and bang. You have your Super League, your 20 teams. It's just a every week Champions League. So do you want us to do that, or are you willing to give us like special powers to where we'll stay? Fine. We'll just give you the special powers.
For yeah, no. They have the leverage. They have the stronger bargaining power.
Unless, as you say, if the people decide we don't want this, then the clubs will be forced to. Well, maybe in theory, anyway, the clubs might have to take a.
But will the people on mass be like, oh no, I will not watch my favorite club ever until they do it right? No, because it's a drug.
Going back to Arsenal. They had hella protest movements about Wenger out, Kroenke out.
Didn't do anything.
Don't go to the stadium. Didn't banners, do nothing. Planes, all
nothing.
Of it.
Nothing.
Didn't and people nothing. Still went to the stadium.
The way they went there fully, 100%. It was sold out.
The only one I've seen work that's in my brain, like at the front of it, was Liverpool. I think they were going to raise season tickets or away tickets or something like that. And I think in the 16th minute, 6 minute, 66 minute, something, everybody just walked out, or at least a large portion walked out, and that stopped the Liverpool ownership from doing something that they didn't want. So, like, mass protests can work. I just don't think people would be willing to do it. Like, you would need six club fan bases to say, we don't really want more money for our club to save, Huddersfield. Does it really mean that much to you? Or would you just rather see your club have enough money to buy another superstar? Sorry if this is late, but are you guys scared of AI and technology?
Ooh, I love these questions.
And why, as black people,
you
should not be? I don't get that. White people are creating the technology without including us. And when the machines rise, they'll leave us black people alone. Oh, shit.
Oh yes, but let's get it, man. These are the questions I love, man.
But okay, that's the last part's his theory. The first part, are we scared of AI and technology? To an extent.
It's inevitable. I am curious, but also slightly fearful. Do you know this boy right here? Shout out to my Japanese fam, man. Shout out to my Japanese fam. You know, Osuko, Sumimasu, hi. Otasa. Now, this is Asimo. And this, when I saw this, this was years ago, because me and my brothers were like, oh, snap. This is the very beginning of cybernets and all these things that we've seen in movies of where you now have AI robots. Because that's the next big thing. Like, look at the leap that we've made from... the iPod and the iPhone that was introduced in what's 05 or 06. There is, because what you're going to have is for all of your public transport, automating systems and everything, even bars, they'll be run by robots, because robots never get tired. They're always on time. They are far more consistent than human beings. And you don't have to pay them a wage. All you have to do is maintenance, you know? So maybe in 20, 50, 60, 70, 80 years' time, a lot of these jobs are going to be run by these AI robots. And this is a fact. This is a fact. Because, again, people say, oh, this is an argument for a god. It's like the kind of god of robots are human beings, of what we've created. And there is going to be a point that as the technology improves, certain robots will diverge out of, or quote unquote evolve from, the instructions and paradigms that the programmers have given them, thus artificial intelligence. And when you have that, that's when things are going to get real, real crazy. Now, we may probably be long and gone by then, probably, you know, but that's the future, bro. Robots, man. Look, as I said again, if I saw an alien, I would my pants, 100%. This is not a movie where, like, you see the white guys run towards the aliens like that. Heck no. If I see an alien, I'm like, guys, this is a bloody alien. I want nothing to do with an alien. You know? So, well, apart from help them to destroy the world so I can be on their side. Apart from that,
It's just cooning, bro.
How's that? No, that's smart. That's not cooning. That's smart. If an advanced race is coming, you think I'm helping these bum-ass loser human beings? Heck no. I'm helping the aliens.
Yeah, the aliens would be like, oh, he's like Candace Owens.
The aliens would be like, this is a smart creature. These dumb creatures think that they can destroy us. These Trumpolites and so forth think they can destroy us. But here's a smart guy who knows that we are the more advanced, better race. Let's ride.
Yeah, I don't agree.
So are you with or against robotic AI?
I don't think you can be with or against it. It's just, it is what it is. It's going to happen whether you like it or not. The thing I'm curious about, will the society, by the time these things are fully saturated into the society, will we have reached a point where they're comfortable, especially in places like America, where they're comfortable having people not do anything? So right now there's an assumption that if you're poor, if you're not doing anything, it's because it's your own fault, right? You're not working hard enough. You haven't done XYZ in order to reach, you know, the American dream. Like something you're doing is messing up. If you have a population that's like 70% unemployed, but you have robots that can do just regular tasks, in theory, that leaves more time for people to be creative.
Mm-hmm.
So that leaves time for you to, you know, do things in the arts or write books or write poetry, create music, go out for walks, spend more time with your family, research, just enjoy your life, essentially. Mm. But right now, that's not really what a government wants you to do. The government wants you to be a worker. So I wonder, if these things hit, will there be a switch in people's mentality that we don't need to work 5 days a week? You don't have to pay X amount in taxes. So what are the ramifications from a societal standpoint, meaning that, you know, we can just have more leisure? And in that, I think that could be a good thing. What are jobs that you'll always kind of need? Like, you wouldn't want an AI lawyer, would you? Or an AI doctor, like a robot doctor? I mean, maybe you would. I mean...
More precise, but then it's because I mean, but think about it.
If you could download every court case into a computer chip, maybe you wouldn't want the robot lawyer.
You need the human intuition because it's all about interpretation. It's not just about knowing the law, it's about interpreting.
Somebody could be lying. So
yeah. So but see, my thing about it is that like all these jobs, like, you know, the garbage men, cleaners and stuff, robots can easily do that. So what jobs will be created for all those guys? The working class,
if robots can do all those jobs. I just don't want them. My problem is, don't make them look human. I don't like that. So, like, this thing on the screen right now, chill with that. Like, make it look like the one before. Like, you're clearly a robot. You're not human.
What about this, though? Let me give this. You know how men complain about, you know, this woman, she has too much
attitude. That's the reason why they look like this. Because nerds are making it and they're trying to make robots
come on,
that they can smash.
You can sell a sexy lady who does everything well, doesn't complain, doesn't have any of this attitude and everything, and she's your perfect. You can input what personality you want for this girl. That's a great
weird.
Sell.
That's weird.
It's a great sell. Be imaginative, man.
It's
Where's
lame.
Your imagination?
No, that's
Where's
lame.
Your imagination?
You should be able to have enough game to get the woman that you want.
So you're against men being allowed to just create their perfect chip.
Yes, that's weird.
Oh my god, where is your imagination, man? Wait,
what do you mean imagination?
Like, do you watch any sci-fi movies? You see, that's why I've got to recommend more sci-fi movies to you, man. You have no imagination. I mean, you're a book geek nerd, freaking uni merchant, man. But
bro,
you need to watch more sci-fi movies, man.
Bro, that's sad. So yo, I want a woman that does exactly what I want it to do. That's just...
So what if...
That's trash.
Okay, what if you're a guy who you're lucky with girls, you're a virgin, you just can't hit it with girls and everything. You want to deny these guys the chance to create their own...
I'm not denying them anything. Like, they deny themselves.
No, but what if, for whatever reason, they can't get any of these chicks, they're virgins, they can't hit it off, all that kind of stuff. You're saying that they should be denied having access to a female robot that is perfectly catered to their needs. Come on, bro.
I think that's trash. I think that idea is trash. Yes.
It's going to happen, by the way. So,
but that's the only reason why these things look human. Because men are creating them to be hopefully attractive enough to smash because they're lames and herbs, dweebs, whatever word you want to use.
Damn. I do want to see, I do want to live in a world with AI just for a laugh because I've watched so many sci-fi movies on it. I want to see a world with robots and machines. Pause.
Would you buy a robot? Would you buy a female robot?
It depends where I was in my life. So it really depends on where I was in my life. So yeah, it depends where I was in my life. You know, so as of right now, no, because that would be slightly scary. You know, because again, like, I don't want my penis to be cut open by machinery and cogs and screws and all that kind of stuff. But who knows where I'll be if I'm around in 10, 15 years.
I don't know.
You know?
That's just weird.
How much do you want to bet, guys, that in 20 years, you'll see Daniel happily married to Sophie116B-4? And I say, Daniel, remember 15 years ago on TikTok, when you said you never do it? And then you'll be like, hey, man, you know, look, man. What is this?
Time's changed, dog.
Time's changed, baby. Oh, man.
No, that will never happen. I can promise you that.
Yeah, right.
Like, isn't there more honor in being alone by yourself than actually purchasing a robot?
When I'm at the wedding, I will remember this corner. I'll be like, oh, yeah. Sophie B-117. Remember, your husband-to-be said that he
imagine having a full wedding with a robot. Chill, man. Like, yo, I'm getting married to my piece of metal. Get the fuck out of here. I'm getting married to a piece of metal. Nah.
That is so robotist, man. That is so robotist.
Robotist.
Yeah, that is robotist, man. That is prejudice, man. You're calling your wife just a piece of metal.
No, make them look like the one before. Just the pursuit to make it look human is just odd.
All I say is that open your mind, stop hating.
Isn't part of the satisfaction of having a companion that you had to kind of work for it a bit? The idea that, like, yo, I was kind of nervous before I talked to her and, you know, we did hit it off, or, you know, she didn't like me at first, but then when, you know, I said X, Y, Z, she did this, I did that, and we just kind of came together. Rather than you go on eBay and you just kind of look, oh, I kind of like that one, I don't like this one, I like that one, and then you just click purchase and then they mail it to your house in a box, you plug it in, you charge it up. And
think, okay, Daniel, this is a big world. It's a huge world. Not everybody has had that experience of going out on a date, this, that, and things happen to one thing. You know, again, my trick was always giving the back massage. That was always my back. You know, it worked. I think one time it didn't work, but most of the times it worked. I always did the back massage, and then, you know, one thing led to another. But for guys who, I'm actually a damn good masseuse, but trust me, I'm a damn good masseuse. So, but for guys who, for some reason, they didn't have that kind of experience. For whatever it is, and we can't hate on them. Because for some guys, they just didn't know. And they've tried.
I think we can't hate on them. But, okay.
You see, that is just being snob. Because this is a big world. It's a big, huge, massive, wide world. And we have to respect how there are not everybody's the same. I know everybody has the same experiences. From Daniel Jones Ortega, it says, what advice would you give about people dealing with uni stress?
It depends on what kind of stress. If it's classwork, you just got to put your head down and get through it. Just read the books you're supposed to read. Go to the lectures. Go to your labs. Just do what you have to do in terms of just the basic schoolwork. If it's stress in terms of, like, dealing with people, I don't know. Because I never really had stress in dealing with people. Just find stuff that's, like, relaxing to you, I guess. Find the time to do your work, but then also find time to wind down, you know, watch a movie, watch games, get a girlfriend. Well, actually, don't do that. That's actually not smart in university.
Especially if she's in the same class. So what's it called? My advice is, you see, uni, it's a very, very big change from primary, secondary school, high school, and so forth, because so much of the responsibility is on you. Nobody's going to wake you up. Nobody's going to chastise you for not going to lectures. And nobody's going to not tell you your work routine. you're going to have to take down notes yourself of those classes. You're going to have to decide which classes to go to, which ones not to go to. And you are given far more agency of how you're going to operate from year to year. So the thing about it is just manage your routine, because you don't really have to stress yourself out, really. You know, you will only be stressed if you want to be stressed, because the whole point of university is you have freedom. Because you're so independent of how you operate, because uni is just there, bro. The lectures at this time, either you go or you don't go.
Do you know what's interesting though? When I was in college, I never had to work. So if you have a job on top of the schoolwork and managing like your personal life, I could understand how that would be stressful, and I wouldn't know how to deal with that. Like on top of like schoolwork, personal life plus job. That's something that I know a lot of people had to deal with, and it burns you out after a while, especially like 3-4 years of it. So I don't have any advice for that, but I suppose the easy answer would just, again, I think Have Hope is hits the point. Find a schedule, stick to it as well as you can, and just knowing what you're going to do the next day and the day after will alleviate some form of stress in terms of, I don't know what I'm going to do. Like if you always know what you're going to do or where you're going to be, there's less stress attached with that.
Also, big thing as well, and this is sleep. How. Also, this is how I messed up.
If you can,
so learn from somebody who messed up. Make use of all the extracurricular stuff around you. I was a brick. I was, because first of all, I didn't want to. I wanted to end school at secondary school. So people say, "Oh, no, go to uni." So for me, uni, I breezed through. I didn't do any of the extra stuff, and I just went up. But now in my older years, I'm like, man. So the societies, the extra programs and stuff that is out there, make good use of them, because trust me, you actually probably find it to be beneficial for you in the future, man. So really make really good use of just what universe is about, which is about, you know, meeting new people, experiencing societies and stuff and things like that, you know. So
also read books, man. Read stuff that's not course related. That's a mistake I made, I think. That I only read like what I was supposed to read, but I didn't read other things. I think people that do read more than just like one type of thing, they have like an advantage, especially when it comes to like tests and other stuff, because they just have more information that they can spit out.
So actually, someone reminded us that we've got to talk about FIFA.
I was going to bring it up. I was getting there. The clips I've seen, man. What? I'm not excited about this one.
The best FIFA game was FIFA 98. Facts. Okay,
hipster. Old man.
Now I can't remember, there was one FIFA that I think was the first FIFA to introduce pro clubs.
Granddad Hope.
I'm ignoring all of your insults. FIFA 98, best FIFA, that's the facts. FIFA.
Do you realize you're gonna get gray hair soon?
No, I'm not. I'll never get gray hair. I'm young at heart, man. I'm a hunk of sexiness.
Yo, pause. Just don't forget your FIFA point. But when you get gray hair, are you going to dye it black, or are you going to leave it?
You know, gray hair has a bit of sattiness to it. You know, see, I'm normally going to be bald, but you know what? Yeah,
your beard and all that kind of stuff.
I'll keep it. I'll keep the gray, because see, that's just cheating.
If my hair starts going gray, I'm just going to rock it. That way, by the time I'm, you know, in my 50s and 60s, I'll be cool with it.
Because trust me, you can make gray hair look cool.
Yeah.
Gray hair can actually look really, really cool.
But you know those people who are like 80 and they still have jet black hair? You're just like, okay, come on, man.
It's like, you know Martin Scorsese?
Yes.
How are your eyebrows still black? You're like 70, 80 years old and your eyebrows are jet black. Give me a break, bro. Give me a break.
But so, FIFA. You said the FIFA with pro clubs was pretty good.
Yeah, it was pretty good. See, the thing with FIFA is that, guys, you have to understand FIFA and Pro. FIFA is made by EA Sports. Pro is made by Konami. EA Sports are literally the definition of a corporation that only care about profits. Konami, they take a pride in making a video game and making it properly. EA Sports, now we have the FIFA license, we have the connection with all of the biggest stars and so forth. So do you really think they care about making the best possible game, gameplay-wise? No. All they care about is that we're just going to put out the same pretty much the same thing every year. Just update the players and the teams. Keep the gameplay fun and arcadey, and just shove it out there. Because trust me, they make their money through those cards because of those dumbass rich kids who buy those flipping ultimate team cards and so forth. That's how they make their money. FIFA, for me, it's not a football game. It's a arcade video game exercise, which I have no time for. So because
that's why, that's like, I'm looking at it this year and I'm just like, it doesn't feel like football.
It's not football. It's an arcade. It's not football.
Yeah, I've seen people play on like Legendary and stuff, and like just the skill moves that the computer does. It's like a player would never do that in real life, but the computer's just doing it just to make the game harder. And that's the only way it knows how to make the game harder, just by doing like skill moves and tricks and flicks and things. That being said, I think there's just something about the way it looks that I don't gravitate towards.
Oh yeah, no, I get it. You see, Pro does not look as good as FIFA. So because me and my brother, we grew up with Pro.
Well, it's normal.
Well, we're really ISS, because we began with ISS on the N64, which then transitioned to Pro. We look past it doesn't have the gloss and everything. And no, just pick up the game and play it.
If you combine the two, if you gave me like the presentation of FIFA with the gameplay of Pro,
that's the perfect game.
It's perfect.
It's a perfect game.
But FIFA has the look, the aesthetic of like, yo, this is like a premium product. Pro Evo, you look at the gameplay and you're like, that looks far more like football than what FIFA is.
Mm.
But it's just, there's just something about it.
Just go to YouTube and just watch the matches. Watch a Pro Evo match and watch a FIFA match. When you watch a FIFA match, it's like you're watching a video game. When you watch a Pro Evo match, it's like, wow, you're actually watching a real football match. It is always going to outsell Pro, and it will always sell well. FIFA, it will always sell, because look, when you've got freaking Mbappe posting on his Instagram, I've got the first copy. Every kid, child, everybody's going to rush to buy the game. So why should they be wasting time on making it the best possible game? Just shove out the same thing, put a few bells and whistles there, and put it out there. And people just chew it up because it's so stupid. It's like, you're pretty much buying the same damn thing for £40 or $50 now every single year. And now with the PS5 and Xbox Series Q, it's not going to be, what, $60, $70? Man, got it here, man.
Next question.
What is the most supernatural thing that's ever happened to you? I do feel that whenever I have deja vu, I feel it's supernatural.
Okay, let's go this way. Have you ever seen a ghost or an alien?
Oh my God, hell no.
Have you ever been healed by a miracle, like the Holy Ghost or something like that?
No.
Have you seen a spirit?
It depends. because for me, I felt that what Ronaldo did in O2 in that final was spiritual. Trust me, I thought that was like spiritual.
I think I've seen people who believe they've been affected supernaturally. So I guess that kind of counts. So like I don't know what kind of church you went to when you were a kid, but the church I went to, people would like get their hands laid on them and they would fall out like in the spirit, in the Holy Ghost. Like, so the preacher, the evangelist would come through the church and he'd say his sermon, and then he'd like, come up if you want the anointing of God. And then they'd lay the hands on the people and then the people would fall over. As a kid, I'm sorry to say it, but I would like kind of fake getting laid out in the spirit. I know it's bad, but I would. Like the preacher would touch me and I'd fall backwards like something happened to me.
Look, but like is that for me? I didn't even want to imitate that stuff because you know, like I just, because for people who are into that, like, let me just not.
Yeah,
that.
But I suppose I can't speak to if it's real or fake for anybody. I know I was faking it when I was like, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10. But yeah. I've never seen a spirit or a ghost or something like that. So.
Oh, no, but my uncle told me some frightening stories of like
pre-colonial experiences days.
In Nigeria, like people who he knew were dead but rose from the dead. Some stuff in the cemeteries. I don't know. I was like, me and my brother were like, okay, this is getting very scary. So was there a final question?
Yeah, well, it was more like a topic.
Oh God, what is it?
Marcus Rashford, he received a member of the British Order.
Ugh.
So an MBE or a member. He's now a member of the British Empire. For his work. For his work.
Feeding kids.
Feeding children, right? And I said, why would you want to join an empire that created the situation for your work anyway? Marcus Rashford is feeding kids that should otherwise be fed in a society that cares about its people, but they aren't. So he's doing it for the government, and now the government wants to reward him with a member or a little bronze star, whatever. So, you know, the Chris Rock, not Chris Rock, the Rush Hour clip with Chris Tucker at the end of Rush Hour where he's like,
I don't know what to say. It's like a dream come true. I got an idea. Why don't y'all take that badge and shove it up your ass? All up in your ass.
No, it is.
And I posted that clip, and I think people, they got a bit like even forward, he kind of called me out. It's like, yo, like, he'll have a meeting with Boris and the Queen now, and he'll be able to do more work. Oh, who gives a
damn, man? Who'd, look, do you want me to be real? How real do you want me to get?
Holyfield.
Okay. If Rashford walks in there with the Queen and Boris, the Queen be like, oh, that's it. But seriously, the Queen be like, what is this young Nick monkey doing here? 100%. Under her breath, the Queen is that, how am I listening to this Negro up in here? I don't give a damn what this little black kid. Back in my day, you were a slave or you were nothing. So you think that because you kick a ball around, I should give a damn what the heck is coming out of your mouth? Heck no. This is England. Okay, this is the most elitist, classist nation on the planet. So Rashford, you having meetings with anyone don't mean crap. You think because you kick a ball around, these posh, snobbish, upper class people give a crap about you? Heck no. So look, Rashford, it's a good thing what you've done. It's very great. That's it. Don't be involved with any of these losers who are just a bunch of upper class racist pieces of crap. So, you know, that's more.
Yeah, I don't agree with. And obviously he's 22. I think he'll be 23 later this month. So, like, obviously he's not the finished article. But I'd love to talk to him and be like, why would you accept this? Any black person that accepts like an MBE, OBE, sir. Who's a black sir? Is there one? Can you think of one off the top of your head? I'm sure there is
one. I can't think of one. I mean, I'm sure there's one, but I can't think of one off the top of my head.
Why would you want to be a part of something that...
Well, you get to fly on first class for free. You get to fly first class for free.
We've already established that you will sell out, so it's okay. But on...
That's harsh, by the way. Don't promote that crap. Come on, man.
On two occasions, if you know what the British Empire means, why would you want to be a part of that? It's an order of chivalry, rewarding contributions to the arts and sciences, work with charitable and welfare organizations... So that's where Rashford comes in. And public service outside the civil service. It was established on June 4th, 1917 by King George V and comprises five classes across both civil and military divisions, the most senior two of which make the recipient either a knight, if male, or dame, if female. There is also the related British Empire Medal, whose recipients are affiliated with, but not members of the order. MBE is like the lowest. So there's MBE, OBE, CBE, KBE, GBE. So member, officer, commander, knight commander, knight grand cross. I don't agree with this.
I'm not. If let's say I created a new Kyle charity and I said, oh, who do you want? Like, it would actually give me pride in rejecting the
Sunday Times title. Published a list of people who rejected the order, including David Bowie, John Cleese, Nigella Lawson, Elgar Howarth, L.S. Lowry, George Melly, J.G. Ballard.
I know John Cleese has actually been quite outspoken against the monarchy and stuff.
Benjamin Zephaniah, a British Jamaican poet, publicly rejected appointment as an officer in 2003 because he asserted it reminded him of thousands of years of brutality. He also said that it reminds me of how my foremothers were raped and my forefathers brutalized. Shout out British to Empire, Zephaniah, man. Bruh. Because that's kind of where it comes from. Just my trepidation with, like, why would you want to be a part of something that... One, the reason your name is Marcus Rashford is because there's an empire that went around and colonized... I'm assuming Rashford's Jamaican, but... colonized your people, Like, Rasper is not your real last name. That's slave master's name, Rasper. Then when you... It's like they put poor people in a situation. Then when one of the poor people somehow finds their way out and they become a star footballer and they have money, it's then their burden to feed the kids. Shouldn't you be doing that for me? And instead of giving me an award, why don't you just put food in their mouths?
It's all mind control. It's all mind control.
Put food in their mouths. Don't give me an award.
It's mind control. People will always eat it up. The minority will eat it up. Trust me, a monarchy existing is fine because you have monarchies in several countries. But why is a monarchy given such importance in England? You poor people, do you think that this monarchy guys care about you? You're paying taxes for what? Buckingham Palace just to look pretty?
Rashford isn't Jamaican. Ah, St. Kitts. So he's Kittian. This is one of the ones where there's no amount of money you could give me to join that.
Pay me $1 trillion. There is no amount of cash on the planet that they could give me to make me come anywhere near taking up that trash knighthood. Knowing the history of it, man.
Sir, have hope.
Get the hell out of here. No.
And imagine you got to get on your knee and the queen puts the sword over your shoulder.
Oh, nah. You see, like, literally, that's the most impossible thing that could happen on the planet. Me kneeling before, it's impossible. It could never happen. Like, literally, even my soul wouldn't do that. My shadow wouldn't even do that. Heck no. That will never happen. Kneel to the queen? Are you sick? Heck out of here, man.
Like, if you met the queen, do you think you'd talk like a certain way, or would you just be like, hey, what's up?
I'll be like, yo, Liz, man, give me, cut a check, man. I know you're rich. Cut the check, Liz. What up, baby?
You know what you should ask for back? I've been doing a lot of, because of this SARS thing that's
been
happening.
Give us back our bronze statues.
I was just about to mention those, the Benin bronzes. Just because of the thing that's been going on with SARS in Nigeria, I've been doing like just a lot of history, basically, of like Nigeria. Did you know Nigeria was, guess who came up with the word Nigeria?
Probably England, British Empire.
Do you want to know who?
Who?
So you don't know. Cool. Do you remember Frederick Lugard? Do you remember this guy?
Oh, that name sounds familiar. The guy that sort of, was he the guy that sort of separated?
Yes. He was the guy that amalgamated North and West into one country.
Yeah, Andrew
the lines. He had a wife named Lady Lugard, and she was a journalist and a writer. And she wrote what I think might still be, at least in a European context, the definitive or preeminent book on the history of what we understand today as Nigeria before the white people came. So she went around to different tribes and chiefdoms and just asked people, so what was it like here before white people showed up? And that book is out now. It's something, I think they were even calling it like Western Sudan before it was Nigeria. So she decided Western Sudan doesn't make sense. Like it's too... It can be conflated too easily with Sudan in the east. So we need a new name. So what do we name it? Well, we have the Niger River. So why don't we just name it Nigeria? Like Liberia or Siberia or whatever it is. They just like put an IA on the end of stuff. So there you go. A white woman, Lady Lugard, the wife of Frederick Lugard, the governor of Nigeria in like the early 1900s. She named Nigeria.
And I think what's it called? Ghana is like... Portuguese for like, it's like a Portuguese fruit or something.
I don't know about that.
So yeah,
I know it was Gold Coast at one point. I'm pretty sure there's no way Kwame Nkrumah would have kept a name that was Portuguese after independence.
You see, which is why, so again, I will not reveal my government name, but I was given an English name in school, but right now I'm no longer known by that. I'm known by my true Nigerian name. So my slave name was distinguished, man. All right, my slave name was, because people say, oh, but that's such a lovely name. Yes, it is, isn't it? But if I give my Nigerian name, it isn't so lovely, is it?
So for instance, like I know Burkina Faso was named Upper Volta by the Portuguese. But then Sankara came into power and he changed the name from Upper Volta to Burkina Faso, which means land of the upright man. So I'm pretty sure there's no way Kwame Nkrumah would have left some Europeanized name when they get independence, I think in 1957. Don't quote me on that.
I'm quoting you.
They were the first, so. But there's no way. The British called it Gold Coast. Somebody who's Ghanaian in the comments can help me out on that. But, yeah, Ghana must be an indigenous name of some distinction. Shout so there's no way Ghanaians. It's some Portuguese something. You represent a creation by a white woman and a white man. And that wild.
Look, man. You know, when people ask me, I come from, let's see, even look at my Twitter, I come from planet Earth. Because, again, this is for a bigger discussion, like, why do we even have countries?
What isn't European is the tribal distinction. So Nigeria is created by Europeans, but Yoruba people aren't. Hausa people aren't. Fulani people aren't. Igbo people aren't. So that is more, I guess, it's a better identification for a person, although that creates its own issues, given the kind of nation state predicament that Africa has at the moment. But yeah, the countries aren't necessarily too important, although people, maybe it's wiser to try to make it so. So you don't have to be from Earth. You could just be where your father's from or where your mother's from.
Edo states, man. I'm an Edo boy.
So that's where the Benin bronzes are from, no?
Yeah, I don't know.
Like that region.
Well, what's it called? We had in our house, we had all these bronze statues all the way in our house that we used to get from Benin, from my dad's village. So
interesting. So if you look on the website of like the Benin bronzes, there's like a lot. Pull it up, actually. Could you pull it up? Like this is like the last thing we'll do before we end. But there's like the Wikipedia page of Benin bronzes. You're like, okay, so where's the African museum here? And there's not one.
No.
Obviously they're there.
Look, when you just type in, the first thing that comes up is Benin bronzes British Museum.
Those things look cool, by the way.
Oh, they're amazing.
Like there's no wonder why they want to keep them.
When you see them up close, just as I didn't appreciate it when I was young, but when I saw it when I was older, these things are bloody incredible. Just the craftsmanship and the detail in them is amazing.
So, boom, here we go. Museum collections of Benin bronzes, right?
London, Berlin, Oxford, Vienna, Hamburg, Dresden, New York, Philadelphia, Leiden, Leipzig, Cologne, Boston, Zurich. But you see, my brother made a very good point. Because I was like, oh my gosh, this is so terrible. Why don't they give them back? But my brother made a very good point. He said, has the Nigerian government ever really bothered about trying to get these bronze statues back? No, they haven't. No. If the governments are not actually forcefully going to try and get these things back, why should I be jumping up and down?
Do you know what I think that might be? Perhaps. Maybe it's laziness or just like they just don't care. But maybe part of it is maybe people in San Francisco, Dallas, Boston, New York, London, Leipzig, wherever. Maybe they need to see that like we're not just monkeys who have no culture. Like, let the people who need to know it know it. Does that make sense? Maybe they're not thinking about it on that level. But isn't that what it is?
What do you mean?
That if people just think, oh, Africa has no culture, they were all living in mud huts, they weren't building anything, then you go to the museum in London and you're like, whoa, like what are these statues? Where are they from? Oh, Benin, where's that? Nigeria. Or present day Nigeria. Obviously there is a Benin that exists. Mm. So maybe that could be part of the thinking. Let them see that there actually is stuff here, or that we were building, or we did have some culture before white people. Maybe that's it. If we're thinking 3D, but part of me is just like, and one, they're cool, so you don't want to give it up if you're a museum. And two, how much money would they be asking for to get it back? And maybe Nigeria's like, we're not going to pay you for something that's ours. Like, just give it back. And they're like, no, we need money.
Well, no, because I read like, one, people said, oh, we'll loan it to you.
We will loan you your stuff back.
Yeah, we'll loan you then.
Danny, have you ever visited Uganda? The plan was to go this year, at least in my mind. But, you know, COVID kind of ruined that one.
Actually, have you actually ever been to the continent, Africa?
Not yet, man. No. Man, it's happening. It's happening.
You preach all this pro-black stuff. You've never been to
Have you ever been to Canada? No. So... No, I'm just kidding.
I don't preach pro hockey. Hockey lives matter.
It's not like I've been here my whole life. Like, we've moved. It's just we're poor, or at least we were. So there was no flight money. Do you know what it was? My dad just, all the flight money that I think there could have been, he just sent it back for school fees. So I have so many cousins probably that like went to school based off money that he might have sent or helped, you know, send. So, you know, Africans and education is like a big deal. Oh, no, no,
trust me, man. Like, my mom was like, look, do anything. If you mess up education-wise, I'm going
to sent so much money back that could have been flights to go back. But it's just, hey, give it to such and such for school fees or whatever. But yeah, me, I want to go just because I want to go. So.
Oh, no, no, you have to go to the continent, man. Because trust me, see.
Like the goal was to go at 30. I was thinking, like, that's a good age to go, but not risking getting sick right now. Yeah,
no, so. But I was like, it will, because you think it will, but when you actually go to a country where everyone is black, it will do something to you psychologically. I don't know the experience, but I just know it will.
This has been the Talking Tactics Podcast. We thank you guys for listening. Remember to follow us wherever you're listening, and whether it's iTunes, you can subscribe, Spotify, you can follow. If you're listening on YouTube, you can subscribe as well. Remember to hit the like button if you're still with us. And we will see you guys next week. Talking Tactics Podcast. Sometimes funny, sometimes serious.
Always ball of football.
200 episodes.
Peace. Sports Social Podcast Network.